I'm Laura Harper Lake.
And I'm Sarah Reitzman, and you're listening to Creative Guts.
Hey, creative friends. Thanks for tuning in to Creative Guts. If you're new here, welcome. If you've been with us for a while, thank you for coming back.
On today's episode, we're talking with Samaya Kashi. She is a New Hampshire-based artist who specializes in black and white fine art photography and oil painting. We're particularly excited to talk with her about her photo series, Diversity in the 603, which was recently pasted onto the side of a building in downtown Concord.
Without further ado, let's jump right into this episode with Samaya Kashi. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. We'll start super simple. Just tell us a little bit about your craft, the mediums that you work in, and your sort of style.
So I went to school initially for art education, and then I've always wanted to be an art teacher, and then I hated the department. I don't know what, but I was just 18 years old, and my parents are both engineers. And so I decided to make them happy and went to architecture school. Got out and immediately decided architecture was the worst. Still do. Anyhow, and then I went back to art education. And so I do mostly photography and painting, and I go back and forth between the two mediums. Honestly, everything I've done in the past year is all just really new. It's not, I don't even know what my style is at this point. It's just evolving, I guess.
I love hearing that. I've been doing art for quite a while, and I still don't really know how to fully answer. Like, what is your style? Like, it's always evolving, and that's good to recognize.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's taken a different, it finally feels like I'm in the right path. I do have to say I sort of felt lost, and I was just doing work to do work, but it started to this year really feel like my work has meaning, finally. And now I kind of understand where it's going, but it's just really at the very beginning of it.
Oh, that's really nice. It must be like a refreshing feeling to feel like your work is starting to like evolve into something that you're feeling really good about.
It is. It is. It's been a really great year. I feel like a lot of things have changed within me and how I see things have changed. And I'm, you know, just have all these great ideas for future projects that, well, I don't know if they're great ideas, but hopefully they will be. So, yeah.
And now, what was it like getting into photography and painting? You know, like, what was your intro into that?
Little backstory. So I'm Iranian American, and I was born here. My parents met here, actually. And I was born here. We moved to Iran when I was about 10 years old. Mm-hmm. And I remember being about 11 or 12 years old, and we went to borrow sugar, and I'm not kidding you, it was sugar, from our neighbor. And I remember knocking on the door with my limited Farsi, because English was my first language and Farsi is my second. And I knocked on the door and asked for a cup of sugar. And she was in her living room painting. And I remember that being my first moment where I said, I want to do what she's doing. It looked so magical. And then from then on, I, you know, kept pushing my parents to put me in art classes. And it's the only thing I felt really successful in. Being a kid who moved around a lot as a kid, two languages, I did not feel successful in school. I hate to say this because my kids don't even know. Mom was not the best student. but what ended up happening is I felt really successful in art. It was the one place that I felt really good. And so I kept just pursuing that, even though I had to fight my way through that because both my parents came all the way from Iran to the United States for a higher education, and art really didn't seem as important to my parents. They just felt that that's something you do on the side. It's not something you make a career out of. So it was a lot of fighting until I got to this point, really.
That's awesome. I love that story.
Down to like the cup of sugar. Yeah. That's such a nice story.
How do you say creative guts in Farsi?
Oh, God.
Do you know? I was just thinking how interesting it would be to hear it in a different language.
I would not be able to translate. It's so funny. There are occasions where I've tried to read my kids' books in Farsi to them. Like, I'll translate to English to Farsi, and then I'm going, giraffe? Giraffe? What's giraffe in Farsi? Or something like that. And so I'll do giraffe. And then call my mom later, Mom, what's giraffe in Farsi? You know when you're like trying to learn a new language? Yeah. I mean, I am totally bilingual, but English definitely is the more superior language.
Yeah.
For me, yeah. It's not superior in the sense that it's the first language I learned. I'm much better at it than I am in Farsi. But there's times where I go back and forth. If I've been with my family long enough and I speak Farsi for hours, then when I go to speak English, I just tend to pause and I'm going, you know, and it's, I'll start mixing languages. And my husband's like, I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Are there Farsi words that aren't translatable to English?
There's a lot of phrases that are not translate. It's ridiculous, actually, when you translate them. So when you're yelling, one thing that you can say, it's just kind of like when you're angry at somebody, they say, which means dirt on your head when you translate it. But essentially, it means like when you're burying somebody, like, you know, like death, yeah. It's like that's kind of where the origin comes from. But when you translate it word by word, it's kind of one of those funny things that when we were kids, you know, you had other Iranian friends and we'd be like, dirt on your head, you know. We'd say it in English, you know, to really emphasize how bizarre it is.
That is so cool. All right, we're changing our podcast direction again.
I know.
Other languages.
Bilingual podcast. Do you ever yell it at your husband? Because I feel like I totally would.
No, my kids in Farsi. And they know that that's when mom's really serious, when I start going in. I've done it to my students too, just to really emphasize that I'm in the red zone now. Like, I'm serious. I'm going bilingual on you. So.
Instead of ballistic, it's bilingual.
Cool. But yeah, no, my kids are like, oh, mom's mad.
What about your introduction to photography?
So I took it in high school because I started running out of classes to take at high school. I took a beginner's, like a photography one and photography two. And back in the 90s, it was in a dark room, you know, and I really enjoyed it. I felt I loved that space. I loved the smell of, I know it's gross, but I love the smell of dark room chemicals. And then when I went to college, again, being completely, finally, my parents' words of wisdom, I guess their words kind of went into my head and I decided to go into architecture. I took classes here and there, but I really didn't pursue it, I guess, long term. There were so many amazing photographers and I really didn't feel like I had anything to add. There are just so many, and a few of them that I went to college with, and it's incredible to see what some of the work they do. And so I just did it as just a hobby for myself, almost, just something I did on the side. And yeah, every once in a while I'll do a show, once in a while, you know, I'll put something somewhere, but you know, nothing really. Didn't really think of it as that's my medium. I just said, I enjoy photography and painting. That's how I always kind of phrased it.
That's really wild to hear, knowing that you just did the diversity in the 603 project and knowing that I like just saw your whole project in the newspaper and that's how I found out about you. Like, that sounds so wild.
Honestly, and you know, that came, I mean, from a place of hurt. That project, and it totally changed my life. And I did send an email to the JR, to the Inside Out Project, thanking them for changing my life. They really did. And it came from a really dark and sad place and hurt place. And I finally felt like that project freed me from that feeling. Yeah.
Yeah. For our listeners who may not have known about this project, tell us a little bit about sort of what that project was.
So not going to name names and details, but I was, this is a group of friends, and one who I'm not considering a friend, but it was just acquaintance, had made a racist comment to me a year ago. And I decided to educate the person in the group. It was said in a group setting. And 6 months later, they made another really hurtful comment. At that point, I got really angry and turned around to my friends and I said, I don't want to be in gatherings where this person's at. And I thought they would support me in that. And, you know, maybe they do. But their response to me was, well, you know, you're the only ethnic person in this group. And you can change this person. You can make them a better person. You can teach them. And I go, what? That's not my job. Well, you're a teacher. No, I'm an art teacher. And so this ended up becoming so big and consumed every thought. I can't even explain the feeling, honestly, because it was the first time I ever felt it. All my life, I really did think I was American, and really, even in Iran, I felt like the American one living in Iran, because I had really grown up here. And coming here, I didn't see myself any differently. I didn't see the color of my skin. I know it's weird. I even went to mosque and everybody else would complain about, like, youth group would complain about being different. And I just didn't see it. I really didn't. I don't know. I had a blindfold on, maybe because I was so concentrating on art. And in that sense, just being in the creative community, just you always feel different, I guess. But in a creative way, I just didn't think of it as a skin color of my skin way, you know. And so when this happened, and it just got really bad. It got so bad that I would walk into a room and they wouldn't talk to me. I completely got ghosted. And all I asked is that I don't want to be in a group gathering where this person's at. I just don't want to be, like, I'm totally love you guys all, but I don't want to be in any setting. So if you're going to invite that person, I don't want to be there. I don't want to put myself in that situation. And so, yeah, so I completely got ghosted, and then I'd come home crying, and I just suddenly felt different than I never felt before. And I just would walk into a room and I'd be with people that I've been with all the time, and suddenly didn't feel like I was one of them. I was like, oh, I'm different than the rest of them. And that's the feeling I cannot describe. And I know there's millions of people who experience that daily. And I, for the first time, I felt like I joined that club. And I can't say it's a fun club. It's a really awful feeling. And so I didn't know what to do with that. I was really depressed. I was really sad. And I knew fighting it wouldn't change anything. Crying about it wouldn't change anything. Defending myself, still that feeling was there. And then a friend had mentioned the Inside Out project a while back and said, you know, there's this great photography project. And I had to do something with this energy, this anger I had. And so I just jumped in. I jumped in like full force with really no experience, really not, you know, not thinking of myself as a photographer, really just an artist, really creative person, you know, an art teacher, you know. And so I went in, but you said, what's the worst? You fail really bad. I just need to get this feeling out. And I just didn't know how to make it go away. And so that's sort of how this sort of morphed where I'm sitting today.
What a healthy way to approach that kind of negativity. You know, a lot of people would fight back with words or, you know, negativity with negativity, and you transformed it into something for yourself and for others that's positive.
Well, I knew. I mean, we know with the rhetoric going on around us, and, you know, words aren't going to make any difference. It really isn't. I've fought people with words before, and nothing comes of it. You just create more separation, more division. And so what do? I'm not able to sleep at night. I have all of this pent up anger and sadness, and I needed something to empower myself. And so, yeah, I don't know. This just came up and it just seemed kismet, like it was meant to be. And yeah. Sort of, yeah.
So what does the work look like for folks if they're out and about looking for it? You know, how would they recognize it?
It's unfortunately, most of it's taken down by now. We had that big rainstorm and it destroyed all the work on the walls. Some of them are in storefronts in Concord. A few of them are still there. I saw the other day, but most of them are gone. But you can go online and see what they're about. They're on the Concord Multicultural page. You can also go on Inside Out and look up Concord, New Hampshire, and it'll come up there as well. However, if you go to the Concord Multicultural page, you'll get the QR codes. And that's, I guess, the big difference between what I did and perhaps some of the other Inside Out projects is the QR code aspect of it.
So you did a photo series, right?
That's right. Yeah, it all came fast at me. So JR, for anyone who doesn't know who the Inside Out project is, if you look online, type in Inside Out art, not Inside Out, you'll get the Disney movie. I learned that from multiple times of doing a quick search. Anyhow, but if you do Inside Out art project, you will come up with this amazing website by JR. And anyone really can do this. I mean, I did, you know, anyone really can do it. And so if you're willing to be out of your comfort zone, and that really, this was really scary. I do have to say at times I really had to shut down my inner fear. Basically, he gives you all these forms and whatever, and you have some guidelines to follow around, but you photograph and you have to propose a project idea. And for me, I said, I want to propose diversity in the 603. And this was a conversation I'd had in my moments of sadness with a friend of mine in town who works a lot with, you know, the Multicultural Fest. She's the one who runs the Multicultural Fest. And I do have to give a big shout out to her, Jessica Livingston, because she really was my rock through the year, just giving me all these positive affirmations and giving me advice. And she's worked with a lot of refugees in Concord. And so while, you know, I'm not a refugee, and their journey is much different than mine. But yeah. I did find that we had something in common, and I felt more of a connection with them than I had in the past. I mean, again, not a refugee. My parents came here for education, which was just a totally different childhood. But so she had these long conversations with me and talking to other people from other countries. They were experiencing a lot of the same thing I had. I mean, you know, similar rhetoric, particularly really bad the last 2 years. So I went on the JR thing. I looked him up. I contacted them. And with Jessica, we decided I'm going to pursue diversity in the 603. And what was really important is not focusing on just people of color, because after a lot of talking back and forth, we realized that that would push a lot of people away. And I really wanted it to be about everybody, to show how we're really all very much the same. None of us were, you know, sprouted out of Concord. Everybody came from somewhere and ended up in Concord. And I mean, that's anywhere in the world, really. Yeah. Anyhow, I went and talked to Creative Concord. There's a group that I got together and gave my idea. I want to photograph people in Concord, and I want to put these big posters up, and they're huge posters, and they're going to be all around Concord. And they were like, and I showed them a video from JR, and they were like, wow, that's so cool. Yeah, you know, because they're really trying to bring more arts into Concord. And they say, yeah, can you come in 2 weeks and set up at Market Days to shoot? I said, 2 weeks? I'm like, nothing. So I said, okay, enthusiastically, and then laughed and was like, oh my God, I have 2 weeks to get this together. So I ran. I'm not calling people. Can I borrow a tent? I need to order on Amazon, like immediately that night till 2 a.m, ordering things that I needed. And then the next day I happened to be in, and I'm going, oh my gosh, I have to go photograph all these. How am I going to get people to come to my booth and photograph them? So I had this really great student walk by me. She was from, I teach at the middle school, and she walks by me. She's a high school student. She was there for some reason. And I said, hey, I had this really great idea. Would you mind staying after school? I want to talk to you. She's like, yeah, sure. So I tell her my idea, and she immediately jumps in. She says, yes, I'm going to get a bunch of kids. We're going to meet you on Saturday to help you with this. So seriously, that's how it all came about. It was like quick and fast. So, you know, something that had been like steeping in my brain for a year suddenly was like, whew, at me really quickly. And so she got a whole bunch of kids to come down. In my head, I said, I wanted each person to be interviewed, and I wanted it to be a conversation. I didn't want it to be question, answer, question, answer. And so I told the students, I want you to have a conversation. These are the questions I want you to ask. The whole purpose is to show how we're all the same. We're all here for the same purpose. We want love. We want family. We have similar fears. I mean, we're all really the same. And so I came up with a list of questions, starting off with, where are you from? You know, and that initial question shows all our differences in our journey. And then towards the end, it goes, what do you fear? What do you hope? You know, it's just, it starts going down to the core questions. And even, it's funny from watching it from my students, I knew how people were going to respond. I mean, I had an idea. I mean, having grown up here and in Iran, I see that we're all literally the same. But my students also knew that too. But to hear, to talk to people and have the answer repeat, like the answers be the same, you know, whether they were a child they were interviewing, a woman who's lived 3 generations in Concord, New Hampshire, you know, or the person who just came, you know, 3 weeks ago from a refugee, literally the answers were all very, very similar once they got towards the end. When they were asking about fear, I mean, everybody is afraid of dying. And that was a very similar response everybody gave. Or, I hope that I'm not forgotten. I hope I have live a long and happy life. I mean, they were all very, very similar answers. And the kids, I could see their eyes just completely like mesmerized, like, wow, we really are the same. And I go, yeah. And it was a really interesting process. It was scary talking, coming up to complete strangers. But in the end, I saw something, and it was funny. I was really excited about the end process, but I didn't realize that middle process that would be the most critical part, that the part that really changed me the most was that section, just the talking to people and watching my students' eyes change in front of me, seeing empathy. Seeing this empathy before that, you know, they said the person that they thought was going to be boring, they thought, you know, would have boring responses, I guess, whatever they thought in their head, suddenly had really, they were like really interesting, and my students were saying. And the homeless man they spoke to, that was the one that actually brought all of us to tears, just talking to him. And when he said, you know, at the end of the conversation, we said, what do you hope for? He goes, to have a family of my own. And so that got my kids, I mean, we got 15, 16-year-old kids, and they wanted, you know, I could see them suddenly being like, ugh, homeless man. You could see that kind of that judgment, initial judgment based off of, you know, how he dressed and how he looked but then at the end, you could see the student wanted to give him a hug. It was, you know, and it was just like a 6-minute dialogue, 6 minutes that
break
was a,
down that.
To break, yeah, took 6 minutes from them to be ew to, oh my God, he's just like us. You know, just wrong, went, had a hard life, you know? And so that was the part that really, it was very transformative. I'm hoping it was transformative for them, but it was definitely transformative for me, that aspect. Yeah. And so that's when the QR codes came about. My husband was sitting in the living room and I'm listening to the conversation of Skinny Kyle. That was the man who was, I could hear him on a phone conversation that he was trying to find a place to stay for the night. My husband, he just got teary eyed. You know, and just this big burly metal man, you know, he's a musician and he's like, and he's getting all teary eyed and he goes, oh, I wish people could hear their voices. I think that would make a huge difference. Just reading about it is not going to be the same. And so I sat on that for a few weeks and that's when the QR codes kind of came about.
That is so... Sarah and I are both just two puddles now in the studio, like speechless at how moving this is. Like, what a wonderful thing for you, for your students, for everybody seeing and listening. Like, damn.
Yeah.
It's just really heartwarming and what is needed. It's what is needed.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the part where we're supposed to ask a follow-up question, but we're just like, wow.
Melted.
So... yeah, just it's 6 minutes. 6 minutes, maybe even less, for you to suddenly go, oh gosh.
So the QR code is on each of their pictures. That's, and it takes you right to the audio.
Of the interview between a student and the person, yeah. And it's, yeah, I mean, they're all different conversations, you know, they're all the same, similar questions, and they all initially start off with different answers, but then towards the end, everybody was sort of very similar answers. My students were just kind of blown away. And even though I had prepped them for it and they knew what the purpose of the project was, I guess part of them didn't really believe that everyone really is the same until they saw it for themselves and they heard it for themselves.
This project would not have been the same, I don't think, if it wasn't for the students being the one doing the interviews. And so it's really lovely that that happened in a way that was just sort of like, it was just serendipity.
Oh yeah. It came about as, oh my gosh, I need to get all these people interviewed and at my booth, and how am I going to do that? And, oh, well, here I am. I work at a school. I mean, look at, there's plenty of opportunity right here. And so, yeah, it was just, just sort of came about, tumbled like dominoes, just one thing after another. And it just sort of all worked out in this beautiful, scary way. But yeah, so that's the QR code aspect. And that was a whole thing that took, I can't even tell you how many nights of no sleep this summer, but of figuring that all out. I mean, it wasn't like somebody gave me a code. It was like, this is how you do it. Step one, you know, make an iMovie. Step two, post it on. nobody tells you any, you know. So I sort of learned that in the process of no sleep this summer. And then I did it all and I sent the files to Inside Out to get printed. And they go, yeah, you can't have QR codes on these. And I go, what? All these hours, like month of no sleeping, no joke. And so I said, all right, fine. I went back and I was literally in tears. Took all the QR codes off, like hours of work, and sent them the files without the QR codes. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to print the QR codes on a separate piece of paper and I'm going to stick it on. And went to Staples with my QR codes files and was like, print these on sticky paper, please. Sticker. Yeah. So I got a big bundle of QR codes and then I had to match them to the faces. But, you know,
that sounds a little terrifying.
That was in my studio with my daughter. Thanks, Ava. She was helping me on that one. So we stuck it on the posters, and not all of them got, I mean, again, I was working with high school students and not all of them sent me the audio files. So, but a good majority of them I got. And so about 75% of them had QR codes, but there were ones that didn't obviously make.
Oh my gosh.
But
so then you took these photos and pasted them to a wall in downtown Concord.
I did. I had to go, and search out owners of buildings and say, hey, I'm going to graffiti your wall. I need your permission. And they were like, what? I mean, it took us some persuasion and telling them, like, honestly, I'm making the glue in my kitchen. It's not going to be there permanently. It'll come off. And they were like, what do you mean you're making glue in the kitchen? I'm like, yeah, I'm making wheat paste. It's literally just flour and water and sugar. And they were like, what? That's like glue? I go,
paper
yes.
mache.
Yeah. But is that scary though? Like, that's glue. And for, I mean, depending on where you live, that glue can last for years on the wall. Not in New England, but everywhere else, it can last years. And so, and I'm like, I consume that like daily. Sugar, water, flour.
Yeah.
That's 90% of my diet. So anyhow, I made that glue, big batches of that glue in my kitchen. And I was like, I promise it comes off with just with the power washer. And so to show them a few videos and some convincing, and I had other people contact them and convince them. And again, thank you, Jessica. She gave me all the contacts I needed, because that was another part. I walked around downtown and I'm marking buildings that would be possibilities. And I was like, well, who owns this building?
How many no's did you get? Did you get folks that were just like, eh, it's not for me?
Well, the storefront. So initially when I did it, I went to the storefronts first. I wanted to try to get downtown all the storefronts first, and then the buildings, then gluing, because those are, it's easier. You could just take them off and on.
Yeah.
And so the storefronts, yes, I did get a few uncomfortable no's. they weren't for it, but you know, it was interesting. People, you know, when you come in from outside into a store, you know, and and I had my kids in tow too. So they, you know, I said, hey, I want you to listen to me and I'm going to try to sell you something. They always think I'm trying to sell them. I'm like, I promise I'm not selling you anything. I would start off my conversation with them. I'm not selling you anything. I'm an artist, and hopefully that, you know, that would be open up a little bit. But there was a couple of people who were like not having it, but that's all right. And there were some awesome, gracious people like Dos Amigos downtown were like, we'll take two, you know. And so there were other places that were really wonderful and were excited. And so, yeah, so I had both. I had every type of responses.
That's so cool.
And the ones who didn't, I was like, you know what? They're missing out. It's fine.
I was sort of watching the process pics of the pasting, and I was like, that looks like scary. Like, just the idea of pasting it seemed like quite the process.
Well, I hurt myself.
Oh no.
In the process of pasting. So yes. So it took 2 days to do all the pasting. I mean, I had about 80 photos that I had to paste, massive posters to paste. And the first day I did have some friends come down and help. Thanks to climbing, a couple years ago, I did a year of climbing. I'm not afraid of heights anymore.
That's awesome.
Anymore. I was terrified. I couldn't get on a stepladder without feeling woozy. So now I was like having to get up, and I'm so thankful for that. Again, all part of the journey. You never know when you're going to hit. That one thing I did for a year ended up coming in handy like 2 years later for totally something unrelated. Anyhow, but we spent 2 days gluing. The second day I had to take a day off from work, a personal day, and I had to get permission to take the day off. And I'm out there, and it decided, you know, I had planned it all out like in advance, and it decided it was going to be a rainy day. And so I'm out there in the rain by myself, 7 a.m. and oh, it was awful. But I went in with my like, you know that poster of like the, what's her name?
Rosie the Riveter.
Rosie the Riveter. I went in, I put my red headband on and Love More shirt. And I went in like, I'm a superhero. Like, I went in like all excited. Like, it was kind of actually pretty funny thinking back on it. I mean, I'm still hurting from it, but it was funny thinking about it now. But so I go out there and I'm in the rain, no joke, in the rain, gluing these posters, and I'm trying to keep cover. And I had a friend put out all these equipment for me so I could do this, and I'm hiding underneath it and trying to shift it around, and thing weighs a million pounds, and I'm moving it around to so I can kind of angle myself, and I'm getting up on it. And at one point 3 hours in, I step back off the curb and I totally twisted my ankle, and this just I heard a crunch, and it was awful. So now, I'm not kidding you, I'm on the ground on the sidewalk, and there's nobody around. Like, everybody's like, it's pouring rain outside, by myself, crying, just sobbing on the ground, holding my ankle, like gasping for air. It was so painful. And I go to pull out my cell phone because I'm like, I gotta go to the hospital, I think. And my cell phone's dead.
This is basically a movie.
So here I am. I was like, it's just kind of funny thinking about it now. I went in the morning being like, superhero, power woman, am I? Like this whole thing, this whole speech in the morning to myself. And then I'm crying and with a dead cell phone in the rain on the ground. And so I had to crawl my way into Bagel Works. And they were so nice. They gave me some ice packs. And I sat in there and charged my cell phone and just hobbled the rest of the day. And I had a few friends. They were awesome. I had a few friends come and help. And I said, you don't even understand. Like, I can't get up on a ladder. Like, I was trying to get up on a ladder on one foot. It doesn't work very well. So I spent the next 4 hours, no joke, on a really hurt ankle. Wow. Gluing. And then until it was so swollen and so bad, I had to finally go in. And they were like, you hurt it really, really bad. I know. Because 2 months later, I am still recovering. It's still can't run. Still hurts. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. What we do for our art.
That's right. That's
I was
right.
going to say, you are supposed to suffer for your art, right?
I have. Officially have.
Oh, man. Ow. I could just feel that. Like, oh.
Oh, it's bad. It's still swollen. Yeah. There's wow. a different, there's my ankles are different sizes. I have a cankle, but it's okay.
Was it worth it?
Oh, totally worth it. Totally yeah. worth it.
That's all that matters.
So yeah.
So going in a bit of a different direction. Mm-hmm. So I believe you had mentioned before we were recording your husband is a musician.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you guys have a couple kids?
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Oh yes. I not only teach middle school all day long, I have a 12-year-old at home too, so I'm surrounded by 12, 13-year-olds all day long. But so my husband's a musician we met in college. He plays for a metal band, and he also owns a business in Concord. So he's very busy. I mean, if he's not playing music, he's working, so it's one or the other. And then I have two very creative kids. My daughter, she's in 7th grade, Ava, and she's a theater geek. I don't know how to word it, but she's it's awesome because neither my husband or I are theater people, but certainly enjoy watching her blossom on the stage. And my son, you know, we're figuring him out. He's starting to show some, he's been a kind of the sport kid, which has been interesting because none of us are into sports and here he is. And I'm going, how's that experience being, you know, it's always usually the reverse, an artist coming out of a family of, you know, athletes or sport, you know, sport
yeah.
obsessed people. Cause I certainly, my dad used to watch football and that was my big thing. I said, one day I'm going to meet someone who's not into sports. That was my life goal because I hated Sunday night football. Anyhow, so my son's got the reverse situation where he's in a home where parents are like, is that putting or goal basket? I don't even know what it's called. But we're out there cheering for him. We have no idea what we're cheering for, but we're cheering. And so he started to show some interest in, I mean, he's does enjoy reading and writing and drawing, but he's only 8. So, but he's recently tried some theater too, and he's starting to really like Aww. It as well. So, you know, I don't want to push anything. I kind of want them to figure themselves out, but yeah, it's cool.
So, tell us a bit about being two creatives in a relationship and how that works. You know, do you interweave into each other's worlds at all? Or, you know, is there, like, I feel like there's a natural support system there for the creativity.
Oh, absolutely. And I always say this, I could not be with anyone other than another artist or, you know, because he's an artist too. Absolutely. I mean, we're not in competition with each other because how we express ourselves is so different in totally different ways. Mm-hmm. He says, I can't even draw a stick figure. And I go, well, I can't read music. I can't, nothing. I can't play any instrument at all. So we have totally nothing to do with each other in that sense or can compete with each other. But at the same time, we can enjoy what each one of us does. And yeah, I mean, he supports me in a way where I can just up and leave and be like, hey, I'm going to this podcast or I'm going to be gone for 3 days to do this. And then the same way he's like, oh, I have to go to Europe for tour, you know, for 2 weeks. And I'm going, awesome, have fun. And we won't talk each other. I mean, which is weirds everybody out, but we really don't talk to each other much when we're both in our own artistic spaces. And they're like, how do you live with that? And I'm like, no, I'm perhaps actually worse than he is. Like, he'll call on tour and get all sad and mopey, and I'm going, why are you calling me? Like, why are you bothering me? So go do your thing. You know, I pull him around into museums and he brings me to shows, and yeah, we support each other, but at the same time give each other space to pursue our own interests. It works. It works for us.
Aww. That's so sweet. Lovely. Yeah.
I mean, he get it. You know, he can cry listening to an audio of, you know, something I interviewed, or, you know, it's just all of us, that human, you know, wanting to express ourselves and knowing that each one of us does it a little differently, and it takes time, and you need that your own time to do that. I don't think if he didn't have the time to be himself as an artist, and if I didn't have time to be an artist myself, separate from being a mom or a wife or a teacher, I don't think we'd be happy people. We'd be miserable people, and definitely not a good couple, not a healthy couple either.
I think that's the trouble with a lot of folks, is they just don't have an outlet for expressing themselves and can't work through some things, you know, and I think creativity is just the vehicle in which to do that.
Absolutely. And that's what we push with our kids too. I forced music lessons on my kids. And I said, if anything, you come out of it, maybe, you know, that's it. You know, maybe you decide this becomes, or art, or all of it. We just try to push as many of creative outlets on our kids, because I do think it's really important later on for healthy outlet. Exactly. I feel like there's been a lot of unhealthy outlets for a lot of people. And art has saved me. Music has saved my husband. And perhaps it'll save our kids one day too, when they're having a tough time.
Oh, I love that. So true.
I can't imagine. How do you find time to be an artist yourself and to make that time for you to do your
lack of sleep? None of us are sleeping. It's horrendous. We don't sleep. Really don't. People are going, how do you manage this? You have to look at our calendar, our schedule. It's a lot of, like, every morning we have this little sit down in bed before we get up, where we go, okay, you're doing this, I'm doing that. At this time, you're gonna make dinner while I'm taking the kids to piano lesson. And then we come back, I'm gonna go to band practice. And I said, all right, I'm gonna go to my studio. And it's crazy.
It is
a total juggling act that we have to do every morning, but one we clearly crazily enjoy, because then we go, oh, you know what, it'll be fun, why don't we adopt a new dog, oh my god, yes, you know, because we're not busy enough, why not do that? I mean, yeah, I don't know why we do that, but
like
we do.
All three of us are kindred spirits. Yeah. Because Sarah and I and our husbands, respectively, we kind of operate the same way, where people are like, gosh, you're so busy, how do you do it? Oh, hey, I'm gonna start this new project. What? Like, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm literally talking about starting a second podcast soon while doing art and music and having a husband and a regular full-time job and this podcast. And it's like, but I enjoy the crazy.
It is crazy. I'm happier in the crazy than I am when there's nothing going on. Yes.
Yeah.
I can't deal with lull. It's terrible to say, but I really can't.
Yeah. It must be so nice to be surrounded by creativity all the time between your family and you work as an art teacher.
I do. It's been really awesome. I work at a middle school, at Runland Middle School in Concord, and there's three of us actually. So in a way, it's not just one art teacher. Typically, most schools is one art teacher to this whole school, and that's how it used to be for me as well. And now I have two other people to bounce ideas off of, and the tech ed teachers are right there in the same area as us. So we're constantly bouncing off ideas from each other. And so, no, it's really nice. There's been certainly times where I've had students where I'm like, I have nothing to teach you. You're awesome. like embarrassingly so, you're amazing. We get one every once in a while that's just mind-blowing. This year particularly, I felt more excited. I want art to be more reflective of who they are as students. And so I've been slowly sort of trying out new projects, successfully, some not successfully, but to try to make each one kind of reflect on themselves and what's important to them, each individually. How can you show that visually, you know? And so I've been my goal to slowly everything to sort of center around that concept, whether it's ceramics, painting, you know. And so I've been just kind of working around that slowly and but surely. Yeah,
that's cool. I noticed that the, I guess, art department maybe has a website and a Facebook page. Is that a relatively new thing? Is it so that parents can follow along with what's going on? It's really neat.
So I'm huge into self-promotion. I mean, I guess because I'm living with a musician, it's sort of how he has to, you know, he's constantly has to do that. As artists, I think that's our way of survival. We have to constantly just self-promote. And so it's been funny, a couple, on a side note, I worked at Dumbarton Elementary School and a few years, and I did this art show with kids in Concord, and I contacted every paper. Every single paper. And I said, you really need to put this in the paper. And so they did. They interviewed, they took pictures, and actually pictures I sent them. It didn't even come out to picture. I sent the pictures. Anyhow, but this went in the paper, and then all these people came up to me like, oh my God, did you know you're in the paper? I'm like, what? Me? No way. That was my response. It was so funny. I'm like, no, oh my God, you're kidding me. Oh my God, like, it was hilarious. But I'm totally, yeah, I know, I'm terrible, but that's hilarious. I do that. So I did that with Inside Out as well a little bit. I'm not going to lie.
That is wonderful because a lot of artists had a hard time with self-promotion. And so it's really good. It's a wicked good thing. I know of a few artists who are almost crippled at the thought of pushing themselves and putting it out there and like, who wants to hear, you know, I think they get in their head about it. And right. There's a level of lack of confidence or just unsureness of the path to take to do that.
I mean, what's the worst that can happen?
Exactly. Right. No, I'm like, do it.
Just do it. Yeah, I'm all about self-promotion.
That's awesome. So we're so glad you came on the podcast.
But this is a whole new level.
Yeah.
And I didn't contact you. I just want to add that in there. They contacted me.
That's right.
True.
Yeah. Yeah, Sarah had to. She saw your work and was like, we're getting
awesome.
Her.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I actually saw it in the paper, and now I'm wondering who's responsible for that.
Oh. Like,
It may have been a little bit of self-promotion there too.
But see what kind of tumbleweeds from that, you know,
right.
You have to self-promote a bit until you say it enough where other people hear it and then they are just reaching out to you and you don't have to as much.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
So it's perfect.
I mean, I even had a couple artists contacting people that I really respect in the art field. And so they contacted me and said, hey, one of them wanted to we're in the middle of a project together that where it's going to come out in January, which I'm really excited about. But yeah, I mean, it does. It takes its own life. You just have to trust it sometimes. You just put it out there. Worst case scenario, nothing comes of it. But best case scenario, it starts you on a path, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So was all of that to say that it was you who created the Art for RMS Facebook page?
Yes. So I have two coworkers, and one of them was like, all right, fine. She's been awesome. She actually runs the Instagram page. She's better at it than I am. I'm not much of an Instagrammer. I don't know why, as my kids call me, boomer. But I don't really get the whole Instagram thing as much. I mean, I enjoy it for some of the art, but I'm not on it as frequently as I should be probably. But my coworker's really great about running that. And then there's the website and then Facebook page and whatnot. Yeah, once in a while we'll throw some stuff on there. But I think it's part of the future, what's going on and, you know, connecting with the world. And that's what I'm hoping to do with art. It's just connecting with others. Yeah.
Yeah, I bet parents really appreciate it. I think it's pretty cool. Yeah. Hey, what are they doing? That's awesome.
It's wicked neat. It's
well,
it's
as very cool. Artists, we are sort of always left out as being the lesser important, particularly in schools. And I'm not saying that about Concord. Actually, Concord's really promotes art quite a bit. I mean, for it there to be three in one school is pretty amazing.
That's insane.
Yeah. And then on top of it, I mean, the whole district does this massive art show. We get once a year during the Youth Art Month, we have this big art show at the mall. And it's probably the busiest that mall ever gets. I had to say it. But anyhow, we put this massive art show, and it's so awesome to see work from like five, you know, from kindergarten up to high school. And you can really see the progression. And we'll go back, like we'll do another, you know, last year's even. And I saw students that I had 2 years ago and how much they've changed and progressed. You know, it's pretty remarkable. It's a really strong department wise. It's a really strong department. We do a faculty show as well at the end of the school year at a local business. And so, yeah, it's nice. But, you know, as we know that art generally, it's not in some schools, it doesn't even exist. It's really important to really put yourself out there to promote because it is really important. Each one of us, we all kind of do a little bit of our part, you know? It could become bigger, as I hope it will one day.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So we are going to do a transition now from regular questions to rapid fire questions. Ooh. Favorite color?
Ooh, green.
Favorite smell?
Vanilla, I would say.
Favorite sound?
My mom singing.
Mm-hmm. Aww.
I love that answer.
That's so sweet.
Favorite taste?
I like sweet things, I have to say. Like, definitely love sweet things. Way too much.
Favorite museum or exhibit you've ever visited?
Oh, that's a great question. I want to say, I know this is something that kind of changed me was probably the Picasso or the Dali Museum in Spain. And the reason being is that most of the time when I've seen art, I've just seen it singularly. You see one painting by a particular artist, maybe two. But having to see their whole body of work or majority of the work in a space and seeing the transition from when they were younger to older and seeing it really changed my view on, particularly on, you know, somebody like Picasso. Like you see the more contemporary work, and it's great. I mean, don't get me wrong, but just seeing that he did like one painting 100 times, you're like, what? I would have to say those were just, yeah. Anytime I see an exhibit of one artist, it's pretty awesome.
That's a great answer. I really appreciate that perspective. Most inspiring location you've traveled to?
I want to say St. Lucia. We stayed in a hut in the middle of the rainforest in St. Lucia with my two kids, and that was pretty inspirational. I want to say when I saw my 11-year-old friending a little village girl and going off and having them, there was this moment where there was, I know this is supposed to be rapid fire, but there was a moment where the two girls, 11, 12-year-old girls, are sitting in our living room in the hut, whatever. And this, I don't know if it's really a living room, it was a space in the hut. And they were doing each other's hair, or they were trying to, because neither one has ever felt each other's type of hair before.
Aww.
I wanted to photograph it, but I didn't want to ruin the moment. Yeah. It was so magical. Yeah. Just the two girls having this moment together. Yeah. Anyhow.
Oh, that's so sweet.
That was pretty inspirational.
It's very darling.
Oh. Oh man. What other artist has influenced you the most?
It changes day by day, year by year, month by month. It just depends on my mood.
And this is the clincher question for the whole entire show. if you could go back in time, what advice would you give your younger self?
I would tell myself to not be afraid to be who you are. That would be my biggest comment to me. I think I spent most of my time trying to figure out who I was and not always expressing it and not always. And now I feel like this is me. Yeah, this is me. And some of you might like it. Some of you might not. That's okay.
We definitely like it here at Creative Guts.
And don't be afraid to be that.
That's really good advice.
That's good advice for us all. It really is.
Thank you, Samaya, so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been awesome. It's been special.
And with that,
show us your creative guts.
Mic drop.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Samaya, for joining us today. What a lovely person and what a lovely photo series you did. I'm so enjoyed talking with you about your work.
I did too. I think your work is fantastic. And I need to echo what I said earlier. So impressed with how you took some negativity that was thrown your way and turned it into a positive thing for yourself and for others, particularly the students who were involved in the diversity in the 603 project that you did. Well done for being the bigger person in a really stupendous way.
And if you want to learn more about Samaya's work, you can check out her website, samayakashi.com, and you can find her on Facebook as well. Her handle is Samaya Kashi Art. I also mentioned during the episode that you can find her school's art department online. They have a website, art4rms.com. That was the number 4, and on facebook.com/art4rms.
As per usual, we'll be sharing all of the above links and more on our Facebook page. You can find us at facebook.com/creativegutspodcast.
Our Instagram handle is Creative Guts Podcast, so if you're not already there, go find us.
Yeah. And our website is creativegutspodcast.com.
Thanks again for tuning in to Creative Guts.
We'll have a new episode for you next Wednesday.
We got to start over. I got to warm up. All right, hold on. I got it. Favorite texture? Gosh, I don't know. I mean, that's the weirdest question I've ever asked. I've had a lot of weird stuff.
Thank you.
That's a good one.
Yeah.